What's up, y'all? It's Zach with Living Corporate. Look, Living Corporate is a digital media network, right? Not just a single podcast. Okay, hear me again. I said a digital media network, not just a single podcast. So when I say digital media network, what does that mean? Digital media network means that we're creating all sorts of different types of media. All sorts of different types of media. Podcasts, vodcasts, blogs, right? Like talk chat spaces, you know what I mean? Social media content. Right? Threads, things of that nature, all types of content. And what is that network? What is this content all meant to do? It's meant to center and amplify Black and brown people at work. Center and amplify Black and brown people at work. So often in this whole DEI space, or whatever you want to call it, DEI, IED, JEI, you know what I'm saying? The RZA, Wu-Tang, whatever you calling it, right? Shout out to Wu-Tang forever. But whatever you calling it, there's this common thread of centering of the most overrepresented, right? So what am I really trying to say? A lot of this DEI work centers white people and white feelings. That's really what this space has devolved into, or maybe it always was. I mean, honestly, we've talked about that ad nauseum for the past several years. But the point is that Living Corporate exists to center and amplify the marginalized voices, Black and brown, queer, Black and brown disabled, Black and brown women, Black and brown trans, Black and brown non-binary, Black and brown first gen, Black and brown people at work. That's what we do. And we interview executives, elected officials, activists, artists, influencers, the list goes on and on and on. And we're always, always, always bringing it back to the experiences of the most marginalized. And we're speaking truth to power by challenging the very systems that exist and continue to persist to benefit everybody but Black and brown people at work. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we do. We're not really here to like coddle or pat big corporations on the back that make billions of dollars every year. We're here to really have authentic, real conversations in a corporate world. Okay. That's what we're trying to do. And that's what we're not trying to do. That's what we're doing. Shout out to the Living Corporate team. I'm so excited about this conversation you're about to hear. We'll be back. See you soon. Darrell, welcome. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
You know what? I'm doing okay. Look, I want to get right to it because you're a man of many talents and skills, and you have a really dope journey. I want to get into your journey. Let's just talk about your beginnings and how it's really influenced your career path and some of the things you're doing maybe outside of your 9-to-5. I'd just love to learn, where did Darrell get started? What were his influences? How do we get here?
For me, how I got here, and I speak a lot about this to youth, is I just really stuck with my passion area. And at a very early age, I would say somewhere around the age of 14, I fell in love with, coding. Even prior to that, I was like, gadget geek and, little things. And, so to transition into computers and coding was a passion area for me. And, once I learned that, this blend of creativity and having a computer do things, whether it was just something cool and fun or solving a problem. And for me, I just knew, okay, this is what I want to do. But it comes from a passion. I tell a lot of people a lot of time, don't get into these career pathways because it's about making money or whatever everyone else is doing, but the passion. I think coupled with that, very early on, even with that and just some other things in my life, I was always the first one that did a lot of things, whether it was, the first one had a car, the first one that moved out, first one that bought a house at like 19, first one in full-time tech. So very organically, I became this, mentor for people. They always looked up to me on Darrell, how to navigate these things. So that kind of, took me down this path of life of feeling like, okay, I think I'm put on this earth to help people. And sometimes it's purely with the technology and how that's helping, but then just other ways that I could be of, strategic advice or influence or mentorship for people. So that's kind of the genesis of how I got here.
You talk about, again, your background and your passion and staying within like your place of passion, and that being coding and tech. You are a black man in tech, working at one of the largest, if not the largest, tech brands in the world. Mm-hmm. As you see right now, we're seeing a bunch of folks across tech, black, brown, white, men, women, mm-hmm. non-binary, folks getting laid off, like getting impacted. I mean, I think at the time of this recording, it's probably like 50,000 or so people who've been laid off since 2024 has started, right? And we're not even out of Q1 at time of this recording. What advice would you give to other employers, especially those who come from, other employees, especially those who come from marginalized communities, on navigating this really tumultuous season in tech?
That's an extremely tough one in terms of, the one advice I would give is, if this is truly a space that you want to be in, back to what I've said, your passion, mm-hmm. if this is a space that you want to be in, hang in there. Hang in there from the standpoint of, not only tech, but a lot of businesses, they need to be able to create their products and create their solution that matches the demographic of this country and this world. And if you look at, consumer bases, there's a growing consumer base for those that, are minorities or underserved or, multicultural, whatever kind of term that you want to throw at it. So the smart employers are understanding that in order for us to market and sell to a certain demographic, we need those type of people inside of, our walls to be able to help advise our products, to be able to make sure we don't have the biases, to make sure that we are connecting. So, there's that knowledge within employers that they need to go that route. Now, everybody within those organizations, especially when you look at middle management, may not have that memo right now. But, as we look and as we continue to grow the diverse talent pipeline, you follow me?
Yes.
And we stay really committed to being able to, train and skill as many diverse as people as possible. And those that are passionate about it, doing everything that they can to land those jobs. No one is going to come out and, knock on your door and say, hey, you want to work here for us. You have to make sure that you are doing everything in your power to intentionally, have the skills, but also get yourself in those rooms to be able to get those jobs, because they are there and they are looking for as much diverse people as possible.
There's purpose, there's work, and there's purpose, right? And sometimes for those who are really fortunate, work and purpose can really collide and intersect. But a lot of times, work is work, and you find your purpose doing something in somewhere else. I'm curious, how did your work influence and help you find your purpose?
No, I love this. Like I said, started tech very early. Age of 18, I was working full time in tech. Did the traditional, grew up the ranks, CIO, CTO roles, had a tech startup, I was feeling like I was hitting a little bit of a ceiling and what to do next. Coupled with, I was going home literally every day with headaches because I was being instructed by, the business leads. And, as a CIO, CTO, you're sitting in a room with the CEOs and CFOs and all of them. And I'm really instructed to build solutions and direct my team. And the sole purpose was to make more money. And after a while, you start to be like, okay, you're messing with my craft, one, because I like to build for the future and really build solid things. But the path that you're going is just wrong. But you only care about the money that's going in your pocket. And that's when, I was looking, I was just getting really frustrated. And I wouldn't necessarily say I was seeking something different, but something different approached me. And it was divine intervention. I never forget. I'm at an airport. I'm sitting there. I'm coding some stuff. I have Visual Studio up. I'm coding something. And this man walks up to me and says, hey, you know, are you a developer? And I say, yeah. And he gives me this 30-second spiel around, do you have, he said, I'm looking for someone to help me lead a team to, you know, build solutions to improve child welfare. And he said, do you have a connection to foster care? And I kind of looked at him crazy. I'm standby trying to get on this flight, by the way. And they're starting to call names. I'm like, dude, who are you? Why are you asking me this? And I'm like, that's the weirdest question ever. Do I have connection to foster care? Nobody ever asked me that. And it's like something hit me. And I was like, oh, yeah, my mom was in foster care from when she was 2 till she aged out at 18. Long story short, we got immediately connected. I started working for this organization, Think of Us, became the CTO. And then at that moment, that's when those two worlds collided for me. And that's when I realized, that was the first time I realized that all of my tech experience and knowledge and building enterprise solutions and things of that sort, mm-hmm. how I could translate that to something different, to, you know, some real impact instead of just making someone else money.
You know, that's just, there's so much there, right? As it pertains to, I think a lot of us, we start off younger thinking about, man, how can I make an impact? How can I do something great? Then a lot of times, just because of the way the capitalism is set up, like getting a job, yeah, you want to make sure you're paying your bills, but ultimately your job 9 times out of 10 is about making somebody else money, or making it easier to make money, or making it faster to access money, or making the process to have access to working capital money easier, right? Like to change right. terms when it comes to making money. Like it's all very, it's capitalist in its centricity. I would imagine, like, at what point in like you pivoting and doing something different to help people, like the things that you're building to really help a community of people, a group of people that are very near and dear, I would imagine, to your heart, considering to your point about the story of your mother, like how did that impact how you showed up at your job?
It changes everything. And to the point that what you were saying about you just show up and make money, I think for a lot of people, working every day is very transactional. Look, I'm coming in here, I'm giving you my 8 hours, I'm doing whatever you want. I'm just make sure my check comes. And at the end of the day, my work is helping whatever your purpose is, that's fine. This was literally the first time in my life to where all of that energy was being, moved into something to where I was just so passionate about, and I knew that I could help. And things different. You're no longer looking at the clock all day and saying, what time is it to get off? You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
Some may argue not a healthy work-life balance, but nights and weekends and things like that blur a little bit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Especially we did a lot of traveling around the country. But to just know that for me, I was really applying a lot of my knowledge to be able to help in this in these areas is honestly the most fulfilling thing ever. And I run across so many of my colleagues, even here at Microsoft, that I can tell they're earning, they're yearning for some of that. I say everybody has seasons of life. And I think everybody hits that season of wanting to give back and or have purpose to what they do. So for everyone, it's going to be at a different time. And like for me, it was kind of that real perfect storm to where I realized there was more that I can do. And then that opportunity opened up.
That's a beautiful thing. You know, so with that being said, let's get further into the Embrace Project. You know, why the name Embrace?
You know, what really comes to mind, and when you think of that name, especially when you think of youth that are in care, one of the biggest things that can be brought to them to be able to really help them is just a supportive network. You follow me? Adults, whether they're teachers, whether they're distant family members, whether they're mentors, et cetera, just being able to wrap your arms around them, whether that's physically, virtually, and embrace them. And I think that name really just, exemplifies what this project is about is, you know, bringing awareness and bringing people together to be able to really impact and change the lives of these really vulnerable youth.
You know, and it's interesting. I think about your background in tech and you sitting at the intersection of tech and like executive leadership as a CIO, as a CTO. I would imagine you're a systems thinker. Like you're building, creating, you know, tweaking, modifying systems all the time. Like that's part of your job. Like I think it's rare, if ever, that someone in your position is going to look at a line of code in a vacuum. It's okay. Well, what does that code do to this and its interaction with that? And it's almost like a Jenga tower, right? Or like, that's what they call it, a tech stack. So like, so I'm curious, right? Like when you think about your background as a systems thinker, and then you think about like the systemic nature of some of the challenges that are existent within the foster care system, where does Embrace come and intersect with that? What does it look like for Embrace to create impact across, you know, and look, this just as a 2022, but you think about Black and brown youth are disproportionately represented. They're often placed in much less stable care placements. They tend to spend longer lengths of stay in foster care. They have higher reasons for removal. They have lower access to support services. They also have a higher engagement or interaction rate with the juvenile justice system. They have lower educational outcomes. Like, where does care come? And where does Embrace come in these systemic problems and challenges?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a couple of things. One is really working to uncover all of those racial gaps within the child welfare system. And you was mentioning some of those. And then, you know, how do you begin the conversations on how to make foster care system work for and with the Black communities? But to your point, is really, you know, coming to grips with what's there. And you nailed it. You know, so disproportionate representation of, you know, Black youth in care. You know, I think if you look at the, you know, California population, the Black youth represent 5% of the population, but the foster care population is, you know, 21% made up of Black. That number goes to 14 and I think 21 or 25 when you look at the U.S. population. So, you know, one of the least represented groups is overrepresented in foster care. You know, why is that? And, you know, there's several reasons that can occur. You know, a much higher rate of, you know, child protective services investigations for Black populations. You know, more reporting of Black families, you know, increasing surveillance and scrutiny of low income families, you know, more removal of, you know, youth from, you know, Black families. So one is really just, you know, coming to, you know, a true realization of the inequities and that exist within those racial gaps, and then starting to think about, okay, what is it that we do to be able to start to, you know, make a difference, you know, change some of the perceptions and just provide more resources to these families.
You know, it's interesting. Again, like kind of going back to this whole thing around systems thinking, and you think about just people and talent, and you think about organizations constantly looking for that next population of talent, and work continues to be strained. Work continues. Right. I think, you know, the landscape of work continues to shift. We see Gen Zers continue to push against some norms. And then millennials really started, but Gen Zers are really taking that baton and running much faster. I have to imagine there's some sort of opportunity as it pertains to like organizations, corporations being plugged into or supporting initiatives for more equitable outcomes within these different systems for youth. But I'm curious to get your perspective on why should people in the corporate space, or the corporate sector, private sector, care about the systemic issues within the foster care system?
You know, one of the things that, you were saying, and the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, when you look at those that are in care or were out of care, and we think of certain skill sets that translate over to the workforce, you know, corporate America, because as a youth, as an early age, you had to learn so many survival tactics and techniques, how you had to do with very little and things of that sort. These are some of your best future workers right here. You follow me getting that? Think of the laziness that exists in corporate America. You follow me?
Yes.
Those that just were, you know, handed everything, expect for everything to be easy, and I just need to do the bare minimum and things of that sort. But think of someone who, you know, really at an early age had to, you know, learn how to budget with the little amount of money they that they have. You know, how can that person be an asset to you? You know, someone who had to, you know, just the overall survivalness of these youth and younger adults, honestly, make them great potential workers. Like I said, these are some things that you can't even teach someone who hasn't been in some of the situations that they've been in.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think it's really, to your point about laziness, we don't talk about it as much as we could or should, perhaps. But even that's why it was interesting to me, Darrell, like all this like return to work stuff or return to office.
And you I was, took it out of my
head. And yes, I was like, yeah. I was like, I remember being in office and like looking across the my cubicle or looking across the desk. People be shopping in the middle of the day. Like this narrative that like somehow people are just like toiling away and there's smoke coming from the computers from typing so fast. It's a bit of a myth, right? It's not really true. And then also to your point about, I think engaging and finding talent and that came from more challenged or, what's the word? But like environments where, where there was more, obstacles where they had to actually serve, they had to navigate and figure out a different, they do, those types of folks do show up different in the world of work. They're much more often resourceful. They're much more, independent,
appreciative. You know, the list goes on and on. Like it even reminds me, I had called a, an office work day, and mind you, it was the first that I did. And, you know, these are some people working for me virtually for like 4 years. And I told everybody to be there at 9:00. And there was this comment of, wow, 9:00 is early. And I, and to your point, it's like, you know, there's this trend of just people just, you know, feeling like they don't have to do as much. And, you know, I vividly remember, you know, getting up at 6 or 6:30 and having to get dressed and get in the car and drive to work. And, you know, this is what I got to be there at a certain time. And, you know, a very structured 30 minutes or maybe 45 minutes for lunch. You're not going over. It's none of those things. And, you know, the workforce has gotten really complacent. To our collective point, there's some skill sets from our, you know, foster community that they could really, you know, bring to the workforce and just be some really exemplary employees.
You know, look, Darrell, I feel like we could talk forever. All right. So, but here's what I want to do. Like I started off this conversation, kind of wrap it up. Look, you're a man of many talents and skills and things going on. Again, you work at a huge brand. You're doing incredible things at the Embrace Project. Like, talk to me, where can folks learn more about you, the various things that you're doing, and what can they do to support you?
I mean, first of all, you know, follow all things Embrace at embrace.kidsave.org. We're kicking off some pilot programs where we focus on working with child welfare agencies to recruit more youth to be able to be paired with prospective families for adoption. You know, those are Black families as well as non-Black families, and really focusing on a lot of the cultural competency for those non-Black families so that they can be better informed and equipped when adopting. Giving them, you know, peer-to-peer support, mentoring, and things of that sort, because what we really want to do is, you know, remove a lot of the myths or the barriers that, you know, we conducted a Gallup poll that showed around some of the stigma from Black Americans from wanting to adopt and things of that sort. So, you know, starting to bring a lot of awareness around that. So definitely embrace.kidsave.org. For me, on all social media, at Darrell Booker, and that's D-A-R-R-E-L-L, Booker, B-O-O-K-E-R. Especially LinkedIn, that's probably, you know, one of the top places where putting out a lot of the work that doing all across the country, very hyper-local in the communities, you know, whether it's child welfare and foster care or other areas, from education to you name it, but just how can technology, you know, really make a difference. I call tech the greatest equalizer to all disparities. And, you know, when we can implement it the same way in these social impact spaces that is used in those for-profit industries, a lot of these things that we're talking about right now shouldn't exist. Right. You know, this is the same technology that every new ride-sharing app or food delivery uses, or, you know, some of these other organizations. If we can bring that to the nonprofit space, the child welfare, these type of entities that's doing work, making sure that, you know, those in our communities have what they need, we wouldn't even be having this podcast. So that's what I'm really focused on. So, you know, please follow Embrace Project. We definitely need, you know, a lot more corporate support, a lot more of the foundations to pour into this work. We want to go from the pilot and expand across the country. And then, you know, me as well, just looking for anyone to partner with, any other corporations out there. How do we come together like the Avengers? Everybody bring their piece of the puzzle to be able to solve some of these inequities across the country.
Darrell, this has been a phenomenal conversation. Respect to you. We're going to make sure we put all the links in the show notes for our listeners and our viewers to make sure they engage with. And you're a friend of the show, man. You're welcome back anytime. Thank you.
I would love to come back. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yo, thank you so much for hanging out with us this week on Living Corporate. Make sure that you check our content out on living-corporate. Please say the dash.com. You can see our entire network of shows. We have all types of content that we've been publishing that's all focused on Black and brown folks at work. Different lenses: mental health, career development, executive leadership, right? Wellness, freedom, all types of different lenses, but it's all focused on historically marginalized, oppressed, exploited, underinvested, disinvested people. That's what we're here for. So also click the link in the show notes. Make sure you check out our merch. Cop a hoodie. It's getting cool. So make sure you go on the website. If you don't want to cop a hoodie, cop a tank top. You know what I'm saying? Cop a mask. You know what I'm saying? Still wear a mask. Look, come on now. Pandemic, still a pandemic, and I know y'all don't want to act like it is, but people still getting sick out here. Trust me, I got coworkers. I got friends. All right, be careful. You know what I'm saying? Make sure you get familiar. You know what I'm saying? Take care of yourself. And look, until next time, this has been Zach. Thank you so much for rocking with Living Corporate. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Living Corporate is a podcast by Living Corporate LLC. Our logo was designed by David Dawkins. Our theme music was produced by Ken Brown. Additional music production by Antoine Franklin for Musical Elevation. Post-production is handled by Jeremy Jackson. Got a topic suggestion? Email us at livingcorporatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and living-corporate.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.